And our friends all hell breaking loose this week, which actually affects very much Ireland and in particular Northern Ireland. Now, we have somebody initially recognized as a tap dancer back in Drogheda.
Yeah, I know.
Only on one foot. You know what the hell? I mean, yeah. You know. Yeah, so...
Yeah, well, you try. I haven't seen you try it, Lily.
Yeah, I know. I'll try it on the other foot, and we could hit the road together. Neil O'Dowd, the journalist, author, founder of IrishCentral.com, Irish American Magazine, Irish Voice Newspaper, and he has authored several books, including Fire in the Morning, Lincoln and the Irish, A New Ireland, and your most recent bestseller, George Washington and the Irish. He was, and now that I have him on the phone, I can say he, and in fact you, Neil, awarded an honorary doctorate by University College Dublin for his work on the Irish peace process, which is the subject of a book, Daring Diplomacy, and a PBS special, An Irish Voice. One thing that strikes us, and should, is that we are approaching 25-year anniversary, actually coming up this coming April. And why would we start at the Good Friday Agreement? And in particular, we'd like you, Neil, to give us a little bit of an intro leading up to the Good Friday Agreement. You, as President Clinton confidant, you acted as intermediary between Sinn Féin and the White House, and that led to the, you know, Good Friday Agreement. Just give us a little review of that period.
It was a historic period, and it's amazing to think it's 25 years ago, but at the time there was movement in Northern Ireland after decades of war towards a peace process, and the big question is who or where or when could that peace process find a home and begin to get established. And President Clinton had become involved in the issue, and he asked Senator George Mitchell to go to Ireland. George Mitchell had just stepped down as Senate Majority Leader, actually turned down a job on the Supreme Court, and at Clinton's request went to Ireland to see if there was anything he could help with in behalf of America to bring about a peaceful solution and the implementation of the Good Friday Agreement. That was an agreement between all the political parties in Northern Ireland, including for the first time the Unionists, that there would be an assembly set up, a formal government, an end to all paramilitary warfare, and the beginning of a new era for Northern Ireland. And by and large, it has held very well since. There have obviously been a lot of problems and all that, but when you look at other peace processes throughout the world, like in the Middle East and elsewhere, it's been one of the most successful ones. And people really are drawn to it because it's one of the few examples of where peacemaking actually works. And next April, I think it's very likely that in Northern Ireland you'll have a visit by President Joe Biden during the month of the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. I think probably former President Clinton will come back. I think former British Prime Minister Tony Blair will come back. So it's a very important aspect. It was the one that gave everybody hope. It was the one that ended the violence effectively in Northern Ireland. And unfortunately, all these years later, thanks to the most extraordinary events in Britain, the Good Friday Agreement is under pressure once again.
Yeah. Again, I think it can be fairly acknowledged that without the help, some would say interference, of the negotiations in Ireland and the stalemate that was there, without the American, without the White House, without Irish America in general, this wasn't going to happen. But you perhaps, Neil, in organizing a group of Americans, not only sympathetic to Ireland, but those who had been very proud of their Irishness, the Bill Flynns and others, the work had begun, well begun here, and the interest and support had begun before President Clinton sent over, Senator George Mitchell.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about that period in time was the coming together of Irish America in a way that we hadn't seen in a very long time. Originally, Adrian, you were part of it with the battle for immigration reform for the Irish, which obviously succeeded with the Morrison and Donnelly visas. And I think that gave a huge boost to people in Irish America, that they could reach the levers of power, that they could become very powerful themselves in terms of seeing what they could do in Northern Ireland. And I was lucky enough to put together a group, people like Chuck Feeney, people like Tom Moran, Bill Flynn, Joe Jemison, Bruce Morrison, people who care deeply about Ireland and who had been successful in their own careers, to come together and begin the process of a new initiative from Irish America. And that new initiative ended up with a lot of people involved, was a visa for Gerry Adams, which occurred in February of 1994. And that was a big breakthrough from our point of view, Gerry Adams in America, an end to the international isolation Sinn Féin, and most of all, bringing to the notice of the new American president that something big was happening in Ireland and that he should get involved. And that's how it happened. But I mean, put it this way, Adrian, without his appointment of George Mitchell, none of this would have happened in the end. I think that was the key move, and that's the move that is rightfully being celebrated in April, that 25 years of an imperfect peace process. But you don't wake up in the morning, Adrian, anymore and hear the RTE news saying a body was found last night or just somebody was shot. All that's over with. People are settling their differences politically. It's not ideal. It's not, the unionists are still playing games, but it's a hell of a lot better than where we were.
The same Northern Ireland that was so well organized, fought for, has had a very shaky record in terms of the assembly itself. In a time where Brexit was kicking in, the issue of a protocol, which would definitely affect not only Northern Ireland, but the island of Ireland, for those who would on the outside look in and say, wait a minute, there's no local government in Northern Ireland. I thought that was what this Good Friday Agreement was, so that Northern Ireland would have its own autonomy in terms of running Northern Ireland. This is not the first time, but it seems, as a head scratcher for many people to say, above all times, why would there not be, an assembly, and where's the problem there?
Well, the big problem, as usual, is unionism. And one of the most significant things that has happened in the last 25 years was the publication of the census figures from Northern Ireland about a month ago, which clearly showed that the nationalist population is growing much faster than the unionist population and will outgrow it and outvote it sometime in the next 10, 15 years. So you would think that unionism would look at that and say, well, you know, the game is up. We've had 100 years of partition. Clearly it didn't work. Maybe we should try this devolved government where we still would have a lot of power. But it's very hard to change the ways of unionism. They're very hardline. You look at a guy like Geoffrey Donaldson, people think he's some kind of a moderate. But he walked away from David Trimble. He walked away from Peter Robinson. He walked away from Ian Paisley because they weren't hardline enough on this issue. But they don't seem to have anywhere to go, because the reality is the Tories in Britain are in a ridiculous stage at the moment and would be of no use to them at all in terms of whoever becomes Prime Minister there. The Irish government has said that they believe very strongly that programmes are now underway that eventually will result in a referendum between North and South as to whether Ireland should be united. And there's no question that sometime in the next 20 to 30 years that question would have to be asked, because the fundamental issue, Adrian, is that partition has not worked for 100 years and it's not going to work for another 100 years either. Mm-hmm. Something fundamental will happen, and it will be that border poll which will say, do you wish to be part of the United Ireland or not? And I think if unionism, with a lot of guarantees and a lot of safety measures, can't join in at that stage, it'll be a very, very sad day, because the game is up for them.
With the shock, but to nobody, in Britain, in Ireland, and across America, the disaster of the 44-day Prime Minister Liz Truss taking place this week. Obviously, that leaves, you know, England, Scotland, Wales in a terrible situation. Many would say not only is the UK embarrassed, but in fact, for the stiff upper lip reputation, you know, it's becoming, you know, a laughing stock, and shutting to us in particular. But the whole mess of the UK not being able to hold on to a prime minister, that's a story in itself.
It really is. And if you look at the ratings by Moody's, which is the market firm that evaluates how countries are doing, they basically gave Britain a negative rating today, which is the worst they've ever done. And they said basically that the British economy is falling apart. And that's coming from a neutral outside source saying, you know, this is very serious. Now, what's happened is, and what makes me laugh, Adrian, is that so many of these people will not deal with the fundamental issue. Before Brexit, there was none of this political problem in Britain. But Brexit in 2016, since Brexit, there has been 5 prime ministers in 6 years. Which is my definition of a banana republic. Mm-hmm. And even still, you'll see them come on TV and the BBC this morning and say, oh, no, it's not about Brexit. Yes, it's about Brexit. And it's about the fact that a group of hard right-wingers took over the party, drove through this highly unpopular measure to withdraw from the European Union, had no idea the consequences, didn't plan it, didn't do anything properly, And now they're reaping the whirlwind because the thing is completely chaotic. And what happens is with Liz Truss, she comes in and she tries to impose Brexit rules and regulations and makes a complete and utter balls of it is the only word to use.
Yeah.
And Britain is suddenly back to where it started with no government, no leader, no prospects of political conciliation in the next while. But the problem is that that's going to impact Ireland, it's going to impact a lot of places, and the British basically have lost the plot.
Yeah. And Neil, the deadline, sit or get off the pot for a new election to be called, in a couple of weeks. Is that something that is going to get lost in terms of with the turmoil that's over there, or is there a possibility that a general election will be called?
Well, a general election would be chicken and turkeys voting for Christmas right now for the Tories, because they would get wiped out.
Mm.
So they'll do everything they can to avoid. Under the British system, you have 5 years in government, and the only thing that can bring you down in those 5 years is a vote of no confidence. But no Tory is going to vote to put himself out of business.
Right.
The latest opinion poll has them 30 points behind Labour, which is quite phenomenal. But I think it comes back to the same point, that when you look at Northern Ireland, every time that there's a crisis, like we had Boris Johnson, who made things much worse. Now there's talk of Boris Johnson coming back. If Boris Johnson comes back, that's even more of a disaster.
Yeah.
The guy who's the favourite, guy of Indian extraction, Rishi Sunak, he's actually one of the better ones, in my opinion. He has made a speech in Belfast not too long ago saying that he would prioritise the Good Friday Agreement and implementing it. But you don't know what's going to happen in the next week, who's going to end up in the Tory leader.
But lest anybody feel that perhaps, never to kick a dog when he or she is down. Liz Truss, 44 days as Prime Minister. What's she going to do now? Would you believe that she's going out the door with $128,000 a year, which is, yes.
I was promised that when I left you.
Yeah.
I never saw a dime of it. I think it was probably Italian money, was it lira?
I want to, for the benefit of all of us, but our listeners, perhaps in places throughout the world, including Ireland, what can you define and tell us about the protocol, that which is in fact the massive threat that is particularly for the unionists to say, the protocol we're not going to go into Northern Ireland Assembly particularly is playing second fiddle with the protocol. What is the protocol? Where did it come from? And why is it a very serious, stumbling block for Northern Ireland?
Right. Well, the protocol was one of the agreements that was made between the European Union and Britain when Britain was withdrawing from Europe. And basically, the land border between Europe and Britain is now Northern Ireland, because it's the only place where you can cross over in a land border between Europe and Britain. Everything else is by sea. And what the Irish government and the European Union tried to do was set up a special arrangement that would not be considered a border, that goods could be sent back and forth between Britain and Ireland without any protocol, without any special measures. And it definitely diminished the unionists in the sense that they were no longer top dog, that the European decision was made basically to try and keep Britain in some way responsible for what they had done with Brexit, and basically letting them know that you can't just get everything you want because you're breaking away from Britain. It's a very complicated issue, Adrian, but what it comes down to is the unionists will only settle for a land border, whereas the Irish government and Europe want a border at sea where there wouldn't be the same level of animosity. Like, if you start drawing up the border again from Dundalk over to Donegal, you know exactly what will happen.
Right.
People will start to go crazy. So, and what the unionists are gambling on now, they were defeated by Sinn Féin in the recent election quite narrowly. And they're gambling that in another election, which before all this started last week, was due to be held in December, that they'll come back as top dog and be even stronger. But I think they're deluding themselves because this is so much bigger than them at this stage. And the only bad news is, the only really bad news is, you know, of the people who are trying to be Prime Minister, Boris Johnson is trying to get the job again, and he was absolutely horrific in terms of dealing with that issue. So I think Ireland would much rather see this guy Sunak, who's at least has a record of talking about Northern Ireland in a civil way, be elected.
Yeah, well, it would be, you know, reasonable and hopeful that's the way it would head, but with the comedy of errors so far, you know, it would be...
Yeah,
again,
it's more like a Monty Python sketch than a British... I mean, you know, one of the words, Adrian, and I think you'd be the same as me, when you hear people saying they're acting in the national interest, you know, you immediately get very suspicious because...
Yeah.
You know, no, that means they're actually acting for themselves. And
right.
All these people trying to...
But it's a great cover-up, you know. Yeah, acting in the night. And, you know, we're not bad at it ourselves, you know, over on our side here. Yeah, that's...
It's the kind of thing Terry Layden would have said.
So where are we in terms of... relationship, say, with the Irish government, which also has had tremendous embarrassment along the way, being, you know, winked and nodded at with respect to the protocol and many other things. I mean, is there, would anybody even bother listening to the relationship or the stability of anything right now with Northern Ireland, considering the turmoil that's going on within the political system in England? Does anybody care?
Yeah, it's a very good point, because, I mean, you could imagine a month ago, the Irish would have said, well, we have someone to deal with now, and we'll deal with this person, Liz, whatever her last name was, Truss. And then she suddenly falls out of office. And before that, they had to deal with Johnson, and he fell out of office. And before that, they had to deal with Cameron, and he fell out of office. And before that, they had to deal with Theresa May, and she fell out of office.
Yeah.
So anyone in the Irish government is not going to take this seriously until there's a de facto leader with enough votes and enough control of the situation to deal with. They'd be crazy to try and deal with anything right now, given the chaos and confusion in Britain. And I think they're smart enough to let the thing fall whichever way it falls before they go back and revisit it. But, you know, it's a terrible indictment of Britain, which, after all, is the mother of parliaments and the foundation of democracy. But you have a bunch of of people from the asylum now running the asylum, and it's pretty bad because you never expected Britain to break down like this.
Yeah. So it's this is a wait and see, but definitely it hasn't helped in a situation where, by the way, so far, without the protocol, Northern Ireland is doing very well, as is the island of Ireland. Economically, it seems like everything is, in pretty good shape. But definitely in terms of inward investment, again, particularly into Northern Ireland, that's going to be affected as a lot of other things are.
That's a very good point. I mean, investors want stability above all, and you certainly do not have that. And the other thing is you have a new leader in Ireland in November in Leo Varadkar, who's due his turn as Prime Minister. Mm. And he may well have a different policy. I think he will have more confrontational attitude to the British than Mike Micheál Martin did.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's needed, that you have to make it plain to them that you're not going to fall down in the hurricane wind that's currently sweeping through Britain, and the changes and the craziness of it all. Ireland has to keep its head down, wait until there's a dependable leader in Britain, if there ever is. But the problem the British have now goes even deeper, in that Scottish nationalists are now saying, we're not hanging around waiting for this nonsense. Mm-hmm. We want a referendum. So the whole future of the United Kingdom, as we have lived it all our lives, it may be about to disappear.
It's, yeah, and again, Scotland, that's not something new, but it has been simmering for a long time. But, you wouldn't blame them at this point. Say, see, what were we telling you?
Exactly.
It's, boy, talk about putting the cat amongst the pigeons. Wow.
Well, that's it. The Tory party in London is claiming that it speaks for Scotland, which Scotland more and more is saying, thank you very much, I think we'd like to speak for ourselves now. And, it's one of the most extraordinary moments in British political history. I can't think of any equivalent where you have five prime ministers in 6 years, and how unsettling that is for a country. And you still haven't decided who the prime minister is.
Yeah.
And so it's potentially very dangerous for the British economy.
Yeah. And particularly if the Tories would even consider bringing back, Boris Johnson, that's the final nail in the coffin. And that's not as much of a stretch as people think. I mean,
not at all. In fact, the papers are full of the fact that he's going to throw his hat in the ring today at some point. So it really is something you never thought you'd see. Mm. But I think the weaker the British get, the more it becomes obvious that Northern Ireland has to come up with its own solution.
Yeah. Thank you very much there, Neil O'Dowd.
Thank you, Adrian.
Again, 25 years later, of reasonable success, is also again somewhat threatened by the nonsense that is taking place right now. Thank you again, Neil O'Dowd. Now, friends, our guest there, Neil O'Dowd, journalist, founder of Irish Central, Irish American Magazine, Irish Voice newspaper, and again, much the voice of Irish America, indeed, very whose counsel and knowledge shared very much by media of all sides, particularly on both sides of the Atlantic. And friends, you are listening to the Flannelly Show. We're coming to you live.